9 p.m. here in New York, the eighth day of the Trump hush money trial here, a busy and productive one now in the books. In this hour of our special primetime continuing coverage, more details from the trial transcripts we just received, the former president's latest word on whether he'll testify and what's ahead while trial resumes next week. Caitlin Collins starts off the hour with an exclusive interview. Caitlin?
Yeah, Anderson, I am joined here tonight by William Barr, who served as the former president's attorney general and who told him that his 2020 allegations of election fraud were not true, but has now said he will support the Republican ticket, therefore Donald Trump again. Mr. Attorney General, it's great to have you. I want to talk to you about how you're going to vote in 2024 in a moment, but, you know, putting the merits aside, I like how you're laughing about that. Putting the merits aside, because I know you don't agree with the merits of the New York hush money case, but you worked for Donald Trump. You got to know him. What do you think it's like for him to be in court, being treated like any other criminal defendant, having to be there 4 days a week?
I think it's real tough on him. You know, I think a lot of the country sympathizes with him. So I think the longer the trial goes on, the more support he gets.
Well, I mean, he has claimed multiple times that this case is being brought essentially by President Biden. I mean, you know how this works and how the breakdown in this works. Presidents don't have any role in what a local district attorney, what case they bring.
That's normally true. And I'm not suggesting Biden is involved, but I think what they're saying is that this former federal official who's gone up to try the case, that this somehow shows a link. I don't know whether it does.
Yeah, but do you agree? I mean, you were the attorney general. Prosecutors leave and go work at other places all the time.
That's right. I think the impetus for this came from the New York prosecutors. I think that they're behind the
case. Not President Biden.
I don't know.
But you have no basis to believe that the president would be in charge of an investigation that's being brought by the Manhattan District
Attorney. I don't think he's in charge of an investigation, but politics, this is a political case.
Your predecessor was brought up at the trial, Jeff Sessions, because David Pecker, this National Enquirer tabloid king, he got concerned at one point when he got a letter from the FEC. And he called Michael Cohen, then Trump's personal attorney, to voice concern about that. Michael Cohen told him not to worry because Jeff Sessions is the attorney general and Donald Trump has him in his pocket. Did Trump expect his AG to go easy on his friends?
I don't know. I don't know what he expected.
What was your experience?
My experience was by the time I came in, he did not push me to do one thing or another on these criminal cases. Now, he tweeted and, you know, made his public views on things known, but he never talked to me about them directly.
So he did not have you in his pocket, you would argue?
It's not a question of arguing. I did what I thought was right.
And you never felt any direct pressure from him on what investigations the DOJ was
carrying? No, he did not directly pressure me. You know, as I say, he was out there tweeting and doing things that were embarrassing and made it hard for me to run the department.
That sounds like pressure.
It wasn't pressure. It was just, for example, I had decided that we were going to not agree to a sentence on Stone that was three times longer than normal. And I'd already decided that. And then he was tweeting about Stone. So it just made it harder to make the decision.
Because it looked like you were acting at his behest
on
Roger Stone's
sentence.
You know, what they were just talking about is this gag order and the alleged violations from the prosecutors here. They say it's about 14. It's pretty clear if you read the gag order and then you look at what Trump has been saying and posting about witnesses and even commenting on the jury here. What does a judge do to deter him? Do fines work? I mean, what do you believe the judge's options are here?
Well, I personally think, you know, the gag order could be too broad here. But I think Trump's, and I've said this before, I think Trump basically has the kind of personality that he's always testing the limit. He's always going further and further, and he's usually up against the line. So that's what gets him in trouble, and that's what creates all these cases like we're seeing now in the Supreme Court, very fundamental cases about our Constitution, generally because of excess.
But do you think there's anything to he's testing that? I mean, how does a judge stop that?
I don't know.
You mentioned the Supreme Court and those very important oral arguments that happened yesterday. It was really fascinating to listen to them. But at one point, his attorneys did concede that some of what Jack Smith has alleged in his indictment are private acts. And they did concede private acts can be prosecuted. Mm-hmm. In your view, does that mean that this case can move forward, at least in part?
No, I don't think the case could move forward in part. I think that if Smith thinks he can try the case entirely and establish criminal liability just on the basis of private acts, he could. But if he requires some official acts, then he has a problem. I think, you know, the problem here is that the government, Smith, sought a very, you know, he had this broad position that there was no immunity for official acts. And that's the basis on which it has gone up to the Supreme Court. And both sides are arguing this sort of abstract general idea. There's no immunity. And then Trump's people make it seem like there's immunity for everything, even things that are not official acts, like just if you use the military to do something, somehow you're immune because the instrumentality you use is federal. It's ridiculous because the question is this something you're authorized to do and have the duty to do and execute the law and so forth? And the answer obviously is not. The president does not have the authority to wage a coup against the Constitution of the United States. He doesn't have authority to kill enemies, to kill rivals and so forth. Those are obviously acts that are not authorized, they're not required for him to do his job.
So why do you think they're arguing this? Because they're doubling down. It was first the SEAL Team 6 can assassinate a political rival. Yesterday it was using the military to stage a coup. They said it would depend on the circumstances whether it counted as an official act.
Right. I don't know why they've taken those positions. I think, you know, the issue is whether or not the president is carrying out one of his duties. And on the other hand, the extreme position taken by the government seems to be that you can be doing an official thing like firing the FBI director or something like that, something clearly within your discretion, and yet you can be prosecuted for a crime depending on a prosecutor saying, well, you did it for an illegitimate purpose. And that would just open Pandora's box. So,
well, I didn't hear the attorney for the federal government arguing that. But what I did hear Trump's attorneys arguing, and this is something that you'll know well about, is Trump's effort to install Jeffrey Clark as the acting attorney general of the United States. Mm-hmm. And the point for why he wanted to do that was not just picking who he thought should be running the Justice Department after you left. It was because Jeffrey Clark was going to use the power of the federal government to pressure Georgia lawmakers to overturn their legitimate results. Is that an official act of the president of the United States?
Well, that's going to be in that gray zone that they're going to have to sort out. And that's why I feel it's going to have to go back to the district court. Was this the president seeing that the laws were faithfully executed? Or was this a candidate trying to bully and press a state into changing its vote when he knew that the vote had been against him?
Well, you
and
were
that
there.
That has to be sorted out.
You were there. Which one do you believe it is?
I'm not going to, I'd have to see all the evidence and see the case litigated.
You're one of few people. You were up there, up front and close and personal. Was he bullying people and trying to get them to carry out his will, his personal will to stay in office? Or was he carrying out, election integrity and making sure that the United States has fair elections?
Well, I wasn't happy with the way he behaved after the election, but whether it was a crime is a different issue. And that requires the government to have articulate the basis of the crime and prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And some of these acts are gray acts. Some of these, it's difficult to say whether he was acting as a candidate or as the top law enforcement officer.
But which ones do you think are gray? Because you and I spoke right when this indictment came out, and you thought it was a pretty good indictment, a pretty solid indictment was, I believe, the word you used.
I said, it was not an abuse that it had a coherent theory. I said I didn't feel it was compelling, but it was coherent. I think the things that I think were private were the recruitment of the alternative slates and things like that that were, to me, clearly as a candidate. But where you get into the gray zone is where he has an argument that, hey, I'm the president. I think this election was stolen. I am trying to see that the laws are faithfully executed. And there has to be some precision as to where exactly he crossed the line.
So when his attorney, who was seated right here last night, was arguing that the fake slates of electors do constitute an official act, you disagree with that?
I don't think they do. I think he was doing that as a candidate. I don't see why it's part of the president's official duties to recruit alternative slates to support him as a candidate. That seems to me to be not an official act.
When you see his attorneys, kind of brazenly arguing about that a military coup could be an official act, that ordering SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival could be an official act. You know, do those arguments undermine the integrity of the justice system in the
United
States?
No, I think they undermine the case because they were stupid examples, in my opinion. So, for example, when President Obama sent a drone strike overseas and killed an American who was apparently in a terrorist complex, that was legitimate. That was the president using his national security powers. That was within the scope of his responsibilities. But that doesn't mean a president gets to shoot drones at domestic enemies to eliminate them. And just because they're military equipment, they become an official act. The president doesn't have the power to go around killing Americans at will.
I hear from a lot of Republicans who defend Trump saying, well, that's a hypothetical and that's ridiculous. But Alyssa Farah Griffin, who was Trump's communications director, posted yesterday and said that you were present at a moment when Trump suggested executing the person who leaked information that he went to the White House bunker when those George Floyd protests were happening outside the White House. Do you remember that?
I remember him being very mad about that. I actually don't remember him saying executing, but I wouldn't dispute it. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound, I mean, the president would lose his temper and say things like that. I doubt he would have actually carried it out. I don't, you know.
But he would say that on other occasions? You said
the
he
president,
was
you know, the president had a, I think people sometimes took him too literally, and you know, he would say things like similar to that in occasions to blow off steam. But I wouldn't take him literally every time he did it.
Why not?
Because at the end of the day, it wouldn't be carried out and you could talk sense.
But just because it's not carried out and you could talk sense into him, doesn't that still mean that the threat is there?
No, I mean, I think, I don't think the threat is there. The thing that I worry about President Trump is not that he's going to become an autocrat and do those kinds of things.
Why not?
Because I don't think he would. But at the end of the day,
what's the basis for that understanding that you have?
Well,
or is it just your own hunch?
That's my feeling, having worked for him and seen him in action. I don't think he would actually go and kill political rivals and things like that.
If the January 6th case, the election interference case, doesn't move forward before the election, is that a mistake in your view?
If it doesn't move forward? No, I mean, I've said earlier on, I would have liked to see that tried before the election, but I think it's gotten too late.
But you were talking about Jack Smith and what he charged. Isn't some part that the responsibility of the Supreme Court that they could have heard these arguments back in December? They chose not to. They could rule sooner. They may not rule until June. I mean, they have a role in this as well.
No, I think it was teed up for them, and they acted very quickly to actually take the case quickly. And I think it hasn't been well prepared. I think that the circuit court didn't do its job. It should have sent it back for a fuller record. And I think the Supreme Court is doing the best they can under these circumstances.
Attorney General Bill Barr, I have a few more questions for you, so please stick around. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back in just a moment with a lot more, including what your former boss has been saying about you, right after a quick break.
Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Whether it's routine maintenance, an emergency repair, or a dream project, Angie lets you compare quotes from multiple local pros, browse homeowner reviews, and even book a service instantly. Angie's been connecting people with skilled pros for nearly 30 years. So the next time you have a home project, bring it to Angie to get your job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life.
I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating.
My colleague Meg Terrell wanted to take a deep dive into something you've probably heard a lot about recently. Ultra-processed foods. There is a lot to learn there, some fascinating stuff. And some of it is probably going to change the way you shop. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back now talking with former Trump Attorney General Bill Barr, and great to have you here. Last time you and I spoke, when we had you on the show, you told me that you would jump off the bridge when it came to it on who you were going to support in the 2024 election. It appears that you have jumped off that bridge because you said recently you were going to vote for the Republican ticket come November, which means you're going to vote for Donald Trump.
I said that's what I plan to do at this stage.
You're saying you could change your mind, maybe?
Well, I'm not going to vote for Biden. This is a wild time. Who knows what's going to happen in 7 months? But I expect, as between Trump and Biden, there's no question in my mind.
Oh, so you're kind of suggesting maybe Donald Trump may not be the Republican nominee?
Or Biden may not be the Democrat.
So you would vote for another Democrat if a different Democrat was on the ticket?
It's hard to imagine that this party, the Progressive Democratic Party, would nominate someone I would support.
Yeah, I know you disagree with him, but I have to ask you about something that Trump posted about you this week, because he responded in response to you saying you'd vote for the Republican ticket. Wow, former AG Bill Barr, who let a lot of great people down by not investigating voter fraud in our country, has just endorsed me for president, despite the fact that I called him weak, slow-moving, lethargic, gutless, and lazy. Based on the fact that I greatly appreciate his wholehearted endorsement, I am removing the word lethargic from my statement. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. Classic Trump. What's the question?
What's your response?
Obviously, what I said was that I'm very disappointed that this country is stuck with this choice between two people who I don't think either of them should be president of the United States. But given that binary choice, I feel I have to choose Trump.
But he's mocking you.
So? It's not about me. I think that I've said this all along. If faced with a choice between two people, neither of which I think should be president, I feel it's my duty to pick the person who I think would do the least damage to the country. And I think Trump would do less damage than Biden. And I think all this stuff about a threat to democracy, I think the real threat to democracy is the progressive movement and the Biden administration.
The Biden administration or President Biden himself?
Biden's support for the progressive agenda.
I think a lot of people hear that. And the case that we just talked about that went before the Supreme Court, essentially, and say, how can you see that and say that Biden is a greater threat to democracy?
Where are we losing our freedoms? How are our freedoms being constrained? They're being constrained by progressive government. And, democracy, especially, from the Anglosphere democracies, the Five Eyes and so forth, the threat's never been for autocratic government on the right.
But how specifically is Biden threatening democracy?
The threat to freedom and democracy has always been on the left. It's the collectivist, socialist agenda. And that is where we're losing our freedom. Parents are losing the freedom to control their children's education. People can't speak their mind without losing their jobs and things like that. This is worse than the McCarthy era. Where is that coming from? It's not coming from the right.
Those two things that you just noted there, you believe are worse than a president of the United States trying to subvert the will of the people by overturning the results of the election?
I think a country, all the things together, like we're not enforcing our borders, we have open borders, we have lawlessness in our cities, we have regulations coming fast and furious, so telling people what kind of stoves they can use and what kinds of cars they have to drive and, eliminating cars and so forth. Those are the threats to democracy.
But President Biden is not in control of what some school boards across the country are
doing.
How is that the same thing?
Major changes are being made in our country without the democratic process, and they're being made by bureaucrats in these agencies.
You cannot argue that Republicans across the country are not doing that as well. In my own hometown, there's a huge fight at the library over which books kids can read. This is not something that is a single-party fight.
Don't you think there should be some limits on what people are able to read at very young ages?
I just think people look at what you're saying and they don't.
Maybe
even Republicans who have concerns about what's happening with school boards or, the culture. And don't equate that with January 6th and Trump's efforts. When you told him the election was not stolen, and he still went out there and said it was stolen and led a lot of people to believe that. Those things aren't equal. It feels like a false equivalency.
Well, I disagree. I think the country is much more susceptible to losing freedoms by the excesses of the left than they have been steadily. And that's clear. People lose their jobs. kids can't speak out in the classroom. They have to go along with what the professor says in order to get good grades and so forth. It's become like a Stepford Nation being directed by the progressive elites.
Republicans are also trying to limit what could be said in the classroom. But I do want to ask you, because you're a lifelong Republican. I don't think it's a surprise that you don't like those Democratic, those issues that a lot of Republicans blame on Democrats. I think there's a question of how they're the same. But I'd want you to listen to what another lifelong Republican, Liz Cheney, said about your decision to vote for the Republican ticket in November.
Given what Bill Barr has said publicly about Trump's lack of fitness for office, I think that his assertion now that he's actually going to support Trump for office is indefensible, and was frankly disappointing to see.
She says it's indefensible.
Well, that's her view. That's her view. The fact of the matter is, as I said all along, I agreed with Trump's policies. And despite the media, the left-wing media's effort to portray it as a lawless administration, it wasn't. His policies were sound, and we had victories in courts, and we defended them. I think that Biden is unfit for office.
So you're basically saying that you are voting because you want the Republican policies.
Well, that's certainly part of it.
Well, I'm glad
you said that. But I also don't
think... Hold on. I'm glad you said that, because you told Geraldo Rivera last year, you may want his policies, but Trump will not deliver Trump policies. He will deliver chaos and, if anything, lead to a backlash that will set his policies much further back than they would otherwise be. You're even acknowledging he can't accomplish those Republican policies.
What I was saying was, if you want Trump's policies, if you're MAGA and want to make America great again, the other candidates will be successful at that much more than he will.
But for the reasons I stated, it's going to be Donald Trump.
That's right. I'm certainly not going to get anywhere near what I'd like under Biden, and Biden is not a great moral exemplar. Okay, and is he following the laws? Here he is giving away another round of forgiving student loans after he lost it in the Supreme Court, and he thinks he can get away with it by getting it out the door before the election.
But these,
he's not enforcing the law on the borders.
But those are policy differences that you disagree with. Trump, I remember also when border numbers were at an all-time high in the spring of 2019. So the idea that border chaos only happens under this administration is inaccurate. But I think people see that.
We had it under control because we had a program approved by the Supreme Court called Remain in Mexico that was fully lawful and had shut down the border. And he came in and lifted it.
How can you equate? The border is a real issue. I've been to the border. No one's denying that. But is that the same thing as what you said recently, which was that, you know, the conduct that was involved with Donald Trump? You said trying to subvert and prevent the progress, the execution of probably the most important process we have, which is the peaceful transfer of power after an election. Name one thing that Biden has done that's worse than that.
I think his whole administration is a disaster for the country.
Is worse than subverting the peaceful transfer of power?
Did he succeed?
Only because Vice President Mike Pence stood in the way, and now the people who are lining up to be VP again say that they will not do what Mike Pence did.
I mean, look, I was very loud and saying I thought it was the whole episode was shameful, and I'm very troubled by it, and that's why it's not an easy decision. But I think when you have a Hobson's choice, you have to pick the lesser of two evils.
You don't see this as the definition of putting party over country?
No. No, not because we're unfortunately in a situation where the policy differences between the two parties are very, very vast. There's a huge gulf. And so in that
Saying Trump can't achieve the policies.
I think he's going to have a much harder time achieving them.
But you're voting for. So just to be clear, you're voting for someone who you believe tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power, that can't even achieve his own policies, that lied about the election even after his attorney general told him that the election wasn't stolen. And as the former chief law enforcement in this country, you're going to vote for someone who is facing 88 criminal counts.
Well, look, the 88 criminal counts, a lot of those are, in my, and I've said...
Even if 10 of them are accurate.
The answer to the question is yes. I'm supporting the Republican ticket.
But can you say that you're voting for Donald Trump? Because you're not saying his name. You just say you're supporting the Republican ticket.
I've said, as between Biden and Trump, I will vote for Trump, because I believe he will do less damage over the 4 years. I believe we're facing the most dangerous situation we've ever faced in the world. A lot of it invited by Biden's weakness. And to have Biden out there for the next 4 years, given all the threats we face, including the, handing the keys to the nuclear weapon to Iran, with a vice president like Kamala Harris, endangers the country. That alone should be reason to vote for the Republican ticket. But there are a host of other reasons. Our country is unraveling in many ways. The rule of law is unraveling.
So you want to put someone back in the position with immense power who you believe disrespects the rule of law?
Well, no, I think he will enforce the law and we'll have greater safety in our cities.
Mr. Attorney General, I think a lot of people will have some stark views on that comment. Well, if he is reelected, we'll bring you back. Mr. Attorney General, thank you so much for being here. Anderson, back to you in New York.
Caitlin, thank you. I want to get everyone's take on what we just heard. And joining us is legendary reporter, bestselling author Carl Bernstein as well. Carl?
I'm looking for the right Yiddish word to try and characterize.
Let's start with oy.
What we've just heard. I think even by Washington standards in the age of Trump, we've just seen Bill Barr engaging in a kind of craven hypocrisy that is emblematic of him, despite his quiet tones, and of a huge, huge problem, which is Republican leaders who understand the horror, danger of Donald Trump and refuse, have been there to witness it, listen to what he said, he saw, the sedition that he called out. Barr did. Look at him calling Trump before a brazen criminal. And to get up and say that Donald Trump should be the next president of the United States, it's astonishing. It's a kind of hypocrisy. Attorney General dedicated to the rule of law, and then he talks about how Trump has no dedication to the rule of law. I think, first of all, it's a great interview. It is so revealing. And that's not to say that Barr doesn't score some points in it. But it is a defining document of where we are. And that kind of blind loyalty to a seditious president, as Liz Cheney pointed out, and really...
Well, how much of it is about wanting to... I don't know what his motive is, but how much is about wanting to still be relevant in Republican circles, to go on lecture circuits, to, you know,
I can't be in Bill Barr's head. And you know, intellectually, he's an extraordinary person to listen to. But is this a case of you'll never work in this town again if you don't come out and support Donald Trump for president? It is a breakdown of a kind of moral, and he is a real moralist. If you look at Bill Barr's speech at Notre Dame in February 4 years ago, it's an extraordinary document.
Karen, what do you think?
I mean, it was just astonishing that he would say that the Democrats took away more rights. He kind of forgot about women and the fact that it's the Republican Supreme Court that took away a woman's right to choose and the freedoms that are being taken away from people. And he blames crime on, he says, you know, there's lawlessness. That's a local issue. That has nothing to do with the president of the United States. That has to do with local police.
FBI numbers actually show crime going down.
Crime is, exactly. And in the cities, crime's going way down. In Manhattan, murder is down 28%, and shootings are down 38% just from last year and year to date. So in addition to the fact that crime is down across the board, it is not something that you normally think the president has anything to do with. I think Caitlin's right about the border and other issues, but I think that it struck me as sort of sad because he really changed his tune from where he was before, and he's really not thinking about things that really mattered to him before, like law and order, like the crimes that Donald Trump is accused of committing, that he witnessed himself, that he talked about himself, and he came out and talked about himself, and now that he's changing his tune.
Ellie?
If I could pick up on that, the one thing Bill Barr knows best is law enforcement. He's one of two men ever to be Attorney General of the United States twice. It is wildly irresponsible for Bill Barr to stoke this really conspiracy theory that the Manhattan DA's charge in this case. And look, I've raised questions about the wisdom of bringing it, but to stoke this conspiracy theory that that charge is somehow a Biden prosecution, he should have said he knows better. He should have said, of course not. It's ridiculous. The Manhattan DA has no connection to anything in the federal government. He's independently elected. And what the former attorney general tried to do is cite this one person on the team, Matthew Colangelo, who was at DOJ and went over to the DA's office. That is true that that happened, but that is all that there is to this. To make that into somebody acting at Joe Biden's behest feeds into straight-up conspiracy.
Well, and I want to bring in Kaylin. Kaylin, you pointed out in the interview that, you know, plenty of people go from the Department of Justice to other places.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, no one knows that better than the former attorney general, who's worked at the Justice Department multiple times and is very well versed in how that works. So,
you'd,
I mean, that's
you'd
just
previously interviewed Barr. I mean, what's your takeaway from this? Yeah, which, by the way, was an incredible interview.
It's remarkable, just in the sense of, you know, one, this is someone who saw up close and personal what those, you know, several weeks in between the 2020 election and January 6th were like. Obviously, Bill Barr left his job in December. But a lot of it had to do with what Trump was saying about the election. And you know, I'll never forget when Bill Barr came out and said there was no widespread election fraud. And Trump kind of lost his mind when he saw that interview from the Oval Office. And to hear it, you know, here we are 4 years later, hearing Bill Barr saying that he will vote for Donald Trump. And he actually said that his name, not just the Republican ticket tonight, is remarkable. And, you know, one thing I think is a question for me is it kind of a permission structure for other Republicans who maybe are torn on how to vote, or independent voters who say, you know, I'm not sure how I should vote on this. I wasn't comfortable with what Trump did. And then see, you know, even his own attorney general, who has been, you know, no short of a critic of him, come out and say this. And I think really one of the most remarkable moments was Trump mocked Bill Barr for saying that he was going to vote for him. He posted that. His whole team was kind of like laughing about it and saying that, you know, it was funny. And to hear Bill Barr say that he was unbothered by that and that he truly thinks that the Biden policies are, he can equate them with what happened in that period to try to overturn the legitimate election results. And he said, well, he didn't succeed. But Anderson, you know, everyone who is lining up to be Donald Trump's vice president this time around, at least the ones that I've spoken to, have said what Mike Pence did that day was wrong, and they would not do what Mike Pence did. So it's not a given that what happened on January 6th, 2020 would happen again.
To me, I mean, that was one of the most extraordinary moments, that, you know, him downplaying efforts to overturn the election by saying to you, did he succeed, as though that makes it all right. I mean, had Mike Pence not done the right thing, I mean, it's extraordinary.
It's the same thing with the execution part. That was a part that, you know, I couldn't stop because I had a lot more questions to ask him. But Alyssa Farah Griffin said that Bill Barr and other top cabinet officials were present when Donald Trump one time suggested executing the leaker of whoever said that he went to the bunker. When the Washington Post and CNN reported he went to the bunker of the White House because they were worried about the protests. And Bill Barr said he remembered him being irate. He didn't remember that specific call for executing him. But he said that it happened at other times where Trump was really angry, but it would die down and no one took it seriously simply because it didn't happen. I mean, it's just remarkable to hear a top cabinet aide confirm that, yes, the president of the United States at that time did say things like that.
Right. And talked about it more than once. Idea of executing. And you could almost see during the interview him sort of realizing, well, clearly you're going to pursue this about, like, well, what other cases are there? And he clearly sort of, you know, started to kind of step back from that. But it seemed like it happened more than once.
I mean, it just speaks to what was happening inside the White House and what that looked like and what became kind of the norm. And then, and it's remarkable. It yeah. speaks for itself.
You know, yeah. One thing, there's a long list of courageous Republicans going back to Ike stopping Joe McCarthy, going back to Barry Goldwater, going to the White House and saying to Richard Nixon, we are going to vote to convict you in a Senate trial if you don't resign. Where has Bill Barr been to reform this party since he left office on December 20th yeah. at the end of the Trump presidency?
Caitlin, just an extraordinary interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carl's not going anywhere. We're going to get everybody's thoughts on the strength of the DA's case against Trump so far as they close out the first week of testimony. We'll be right back.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. Celebrities of all kinds are speaking publicly about their therapeutic trips, so to speak. It turns out there is a burgeoning industry ready to serve the new influx of people who find themselves turning away from traditional mental health therapy. The gap between what we know and what we don't about psychedelic therapy. Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
It seems even more likely that Donald Trump will not be taking the stand in his own defense. Just last week, he insisted he would testify in his New York criminal trial, although he used the word would, not will. But in a new interview with Newsmax, he was notably noncommittal.
Are you more or less likely, you think, to take the stand in the Manhattan case right now? I know.
Well, I would if it's necessary. Legal scholars and experts, they're saying, what kind of a case is this? There is no case.
And Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Carl Bernstein is with us as well, along with my panel. There is no scenario, or do you believe there's a scenario under which he would actually take the stand?
No. With given the allegations, and no, not a chance. You know, one of the things about this trial, though, is that these supposed Justice Department people who put the prosecutor here up to this, I do not know a single person in the Biden White House who doesn't think and hate that this case was brought and thinks that it was a great mistake to do so, and that there are these three other cases that have an incredible gravity that go to the heart of Trump's seditious conduct, and they would much rather this case have never been brought. I don't know anybody that thinks that that they like the idea of this case
so interesting. Going ahead. And doesn't that just sink the conspiracy right there? Because if Joe Biden was so eager to get Donald Trump at any cost, I mean, Jack Smith has brought two way stronger charges. So why would he be bothering with this secret mole in the DA?
Monumental right. consequence to the future of democracy.
Exactly. Yeah,
and where this country goes.
How, Karen, how soon do you think Michael Cohen would be called to testify? Because you probably don't want to have him be the last witness, do you?
No.
I think you're going to see some people like you saw this week putting documents in and things that you don't really know what the significance is of that is yet. Like, what was the significance of a certain calendar entry that they put in today for Rona Graff? I know there was they said that Donald Trump had lessons on how to use a teleprompter. What was that about? I mean, but for some reason that was put in. There's little things like that that will be put into evidence, dates and phone numbers and bank records that I think are a setup for other witnesses, perhaps someone like Michael Cohen, who will then be able to talk about what those mean. But I just wanted to say to you, Mr. Bernstein, I'm one of the people who thinks that it was a good idea to bring this case and that it is an important case because what is coming out in the evidence, especially through David Pecker, in my view, just from seeing what's coming out, is this was really about trying to influence an election, just like the other
Absolutely.
Cases.
Absolutely. The four cases fit together. That's very true.
They fit together.
Undermining elections.
Undermining the election. Only this is the one he actually succeeded. I'm reminded that he won this election in 2016 in three swing states by 80,000 votes.
And you think, storm that, the fact that a multi-billionaire named Donald Trump, who everyone knows about all the women he's been with and Marla Maples and this and that, that if it came out, he fooled around with Stormy Daniels, that would have changed the election?
He thought so. That's
he thought so.
No, he's just protecting, yeah. not that it was going to swing the election. This is 2015. He didn't even think he was going to be president of the United States. Trust me, I knew people around him. Nobody was more, I spoke to Rudy Giuliani the day after.
But
nobody was more
money.
Surprised he won an election than
now.
Donald Trump.
But there's going to be testimony about...
My friend, he spent, what, $100,000 or $500,000? That's like, you know, you giving me... Well,
there's going to be testimony about the Access Hollywood tape and the impact, the bombshell impact that had on the campaign.
Exactly.
And how that actually changed the desire to silence Stormy Daniels.
And I think what the prosecution's going to try to do, and I think today, I think you're right, everybody knows now and everyone's desensitized to it. But back in 2015 and 2016, other than the people around him, I think the general public didn't know.
I think that this type of
the Access Hollywood tape was very devastating. And I don't think they wanted, look, right-wing conservatives as part of his base, I don't think they wanted it out there that he was cheating on Melania with Karen McDougal and then cheating on Karen McDougal with Stormy Daniels. And so
it was untested at that point. You know, would the evangelicals actually embrace him as they did? And, you know, you can make an argument. There were some who thought, well, of course, you know, once people know the full sordid details of his life, they're not going to. Of course, little do we know, actually, of course, they actually would embrace him and just ignore it, despite all the stuff they have said. But back in 2015, he was an untested candidate.
Exactly.
Well, wasn't he known as the most eligible bachelor?
What fights against your argument is it's Donald Trump, we now know, and Michael Cohen who held this meeting, who called David Pecker in for this meeting. It wasn't David Pecker coming as previously thought.
I'm not saying they didn't desire Gantz.
Of course, his obvious defense is, I've been buying stories and controlling my media for my whole life. That's my brand. The difference here is he was running for office. And yes, celebrities have gone to the National Enquirer. They've bought and suppressed bad stories. And that's not a crime. If you have the money to buy silence, buy it. The difference in this case and why it was brought, which goes to the heart of what we've been talking about, is Donald Trump was no longer just a celebrity at the time this was happening. He was a celebrity running for office. And I think his attorney, Todd Blanche, his lead counsel, made a mistake in the opening argument because he made a statement to the jury, and I think it's going to come back to bite him later on. He said, there's nothing wrong with influencing an election. It's called democracy. And I think the Manhattan DA's office would beg to differ, because when you are influencing an election illawfully under New York state law, that's called an illegality. And that's what this case is really about.
But Anson, I was agreeing with what Carl said in terms of the power of the case or the ramifications of his actions. In other words, trying to stop the presidential election in January 6th is like a 10 on a scale from 1 to 10. Paying off a prostitute, basically, for not talking her mouth, shooting her mouth off about an affair, is like a 2.5. So to Carl's point, they're saying the White House isn't happy that this is the case that went first.
Sure,
it's because people are like laughing about it compared to let's stop the peaceful transfer of power.
Yeah.
But what it's all about in every instance is undermining a free and fair election.
Exactly.
I want to thank everybody. We're going to leave the story for a few moments for breaking news out of the Midwest. Video, one of the least of at least 60 tornadoes that touched down in at least 5 states today. More on the damage and the forecast next. More coverage of Donald Trump's criminal trial in a moment on CNN. But tonight we're also monitoring a severe weather system that spawned dozens of violent tornadoes that tore across at least 5 states today. Take a look at this video. Comes to us from a storm chaser. Got very close to a tornado in Lincoln, Nebraska. One tornado in the area ripped through a local business with 70 people sheltering inside. Authorities say at least 3 people were injured. At least 60 tornadoes have been reported. I want to get right to CNN meteorologist Chad Myers with the latest. So what is the damage in Nebraska, Chad?
It is bad, Anderson. We know that at least for a while this was at 150 to almost 200 miles per hour as it went from that Lincoln picture that you see there to what was almost west of Omaha into the Omaha suburb of Elkhorn. And so solidly EF3, EF4 damage. And you know what? The pictures tell the story. There was so much damage here with 67 tornadoes. So 66 other than that one right there.
It's incredible. Were there warnings?
Oh, absolutely there are warnings, because you can see it. Look, this is called, we call this a LP, low precipitation tornado, which means it's visible. There are probably thousands of videos of this tornado online, which means the Weather Service saw it too. It wasn't hidden in some cloud or some rain-wrapped tornado that you don't even know that's there. This is the reason that we had the warnings that were so well done. Even the police chief of Omaha said the warnings that were put out by the Weather Service today saved lives. We had warnings in time. They knew it was coming. They got into their shelters, the safest place in their houses, and without a doubt, the Weather Service saved many lives when you look at that.
And where's the severe weather heading next?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's heading to the same spot. This is going to regenerate tomorrow to be in the same areas that we have right now. Even Des Moines right now, I need you to really pay attention to this. There are still tornado warnings for you. Some of these storms are still rotating. In the dark at night, storms do lose their power. So that's happening, but not enough power to take away the tornadoes for now. Another hour, hour and a half, yes, this will be done. But look at where the tornadoes, look at where the storms are again tomorrow, from Oklahoma City to Texas, back into the same places that got hit today. Exactly what first responders don't need, obviously. Yeah. What people are trying to pick up their lives and put their pieces back together. So far, Anderson, there have been zero reports of fatalities, yeah, which to me is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, those images are extraordinary. Chad, thank you. Our special primetime coverage of the historic Trump trial continues next.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, host of the Chasing Life podcast. In honor of our 10th season, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message at 470-396-0832 and tell us how you chase life. It could be used on an upcoming episode.